Southwest Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. The U.S. takes responsibility for the strike on an Afghan hospital. U.S. Army General John Campbell, commander of U.S. forces in Afghanistan, conceded to U.S. lawmakers Tuesday U.S. forces were responsible for Saturday's airstrike on a hospital during the campaign to retake Kunduz from the Taliban. 22 people, including staff members of Doctors Without Borders, were killed. Campbell said U.S. forces are undergoing a review of rules of engagement.
I'd also like to remind the committee and the American people that we continue to make extraordinary efforts to protect civilians. No military in history has done more to avoid harming innocents. We've readily assumed greater risks to our own forces in order to protect non-combatants. To prevent any future incidents of this nature, I've directed the entire force to undergo in-depth training in order to review all of our operational authorities and rules of engagement.
Meanwhile, there was renewed fighting for control of Kunduz Tuesday, which was overrun by Taliban more than a week ago. UN envoy Monkey Hamdi told the Security Council Tuesday the peace process in Mali is back on track after violence in August threatened to disrupt a June peace deal. But he says the Malian people need help in their transition to peace.
There is a strong need to ensure the delivery of peace dividends, especially to the population of conflict-affected areas. MINUSMA has been seeking to provide improved water access, supporting expanded electricity supply, ensuring the return to school for children whose education has been thwarted by the conflict, and encouraging the voluntary return of internally displaced persons or refugees to their communities of origin.
However, he cautions vigilance is required as the peace process remains fragile. This is VOA News. The Islamic State has claimed responsibility for a series of deadly attacks on government headquarters and positions of the Saudi-led coalition in the Yemeni port city of Aden. The United Arab Emirates said rocket attacks Tuesday killed 15 troops, including Yemeni forces and members of the Saudi-led coalition. U.S. spokesman Mark Toner Tuesday urged Russia not to expand its airstrikes from Syria into neighboring Iraq in the effort to degrade and destroy the Islamic State known as ISIL.
We don't want to see that same formula certainly transferred to Iraq. We've been pretty consistent about this. Where we want to see pressure applied is on ISIL. That needs to be consistent. Everybody needs to do more in that respect. We're part of a 60-odd member coalition doing exactly that, supporting these groups in northern Syria. If Russia wants to play in that sphere, again, we could see a role for it there, but we've not seen that thus far. And similarly in Iraq.
Last week, Iraq's Prime Minister Haider al-Abadi said he would be willing to consider allowing Russia to carry out strikes against IS targets in his country. Chad's military says 11 of its soldiers were killed Tuesday in a cross-border attack by suspected Boko Haram militants. Several others were wounded. The army also says 17 militant fighters were killed in the clash, which occurred near Lake Chad. Chad is a leading contributor to a regional joint task force set up to defeat Boko Haram. The 2015 Nobel Physics Prize has been awarded to Takaki Kajita of Japan and Canada's Arthur MacDonald for their discovery of neutrino oscillations, which show that neutrinos, the second most abundant particles in the universe, next to photons, have mass and change identities. MacDonald says scientists still don't know how to subdivide neutrinos, electrons, and quarks.
They're the most elusive of all those particles, and therefore the question of whether or not they even have a mass that is greater than zero was not known until our measurements and those of our colleagues in Japan.
The Nobel Committee said the research has changed the world's understanding of the innermost workings of matter. The death toll from Guatemala's mudslide last week has risen to at least 171, with hundreds more still missing. Heavy rains caused the mudslide that buried hundreds late Thursday in Santa Catarina Pinula outside Guatemala City. Nearly 900 migrants from Africa were brought to southern Italy Tuesday, days after being rescued in the Mediterranean by European naval forces. Meanwhile, the European Union is expected to begin relocating Eritrean refugees from overburdened countries like Italy and Greece to other EU countries. The family of convicted South African Paralympic athlete Oscar Pistorius, jailed in 2014 for killing his girlfriend, is criticizing government authorities for delays in transferring him from prison to house arrest. I'm Victor Beatty.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty, Washington. Today's Wednesday, October 7th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. DRC's government accuses Human Rights Watch of politicizing human rights issues.
We need really those NGOs cooperate with us to help us, you know, repress these people who are abusing human rights. But when you are politicizing this concept of human rights, is rubbish.
Lambert Mende is Information Minister for the Democratic Republic of Congo. Another Human Rights Watch report says international aid has failed to secure justice in a DRC rape trial. An international aid group is forced to withdraw from South Sudan's Lier County. And the bodies of nearly 100 African migrants washed up Libya's coast.
We know that there are two different areas where this is occurring near Libya's coast. 85 bodies have been found near Tripoli and another 10 around Sabah.
Daniel Szabo is spokesperson for the International Organization for Migration. The United Nations says adolescents are shortchanged on healthcare globally, and recyclers work for a reusable future in Africa's largest city, Lagos. Those stories plus Mark Oldman's sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. A spokesman for the Democratic Republic of Congo's government says human rights groups concerned about abuses in the DRC should cooperate with the government by providing proof of alleged violations so that the government may investigate such claims. This came after the U.S.-based Human Rights Watch released a report on Tuesday accusing top security and ruling party officials in the DRC of hiring thugs to attack peaceful demonstrators last month who were calling on President Joseph Kabila not to seek another term when his mandate ends in December 2016. Information Minister Lambert Mende said the allegations are not credible because Human Rights Watch failed to provide a single name to support its claims.
We were very concerned about that statement from Human Rights Watch. We did ask them to give us more evidence to help us to inquire. But what we saw, it was just a copy of a statement from the opposition that was launched the same day of the demonstration. We didn't see any name, any evidence at all. And when they are talking of someone being killed, there is no name of these so-called people being killed. These people who have been killed, they supposed to not have even a family to make a claim or what only Human Rights Watch is speaking about it. So we are still waiting some evidence because we are smelling some game to feed this claim that is being made in Geneva in the Commission of Human Rights of the United Nations, that a special reporter be appointed on human rights issues in Congo, what we opposed. And it seems that they have to feed this claim only because if they wanted to help our justice to investigate about anybody, even a member of the government or a member of a party linked to the government, they could have given us a single name, but there is no name. So there is a lack of credibility in these allegations from Human Rights Watch.
One thing they say is that 100 youth that were recruited by senior security officials and President Kabila's party, and they said that they might have been paid about $65 each to do what happened.
We don't idea anybody, even you can take a pen and write that I have testimonies from 100 people, 1,000 people who told me that so and so did so and so, but there is no name. Who told them? So it is just a copy. It is a copy of a communique of the opposition. So we don't see any credibility to this statement from Human Rights Watch. We are sorry. We need really those NGOs to cooperate with us to help us, you know, repress these people who are abusing human rights. But when you are politicizing this concept of human rights, this is rubbish. We can't follow them.
People are talking now about whether your president going to seek another office. So there's this concern that's causing attention in your country.
I don't see the link We are waiting the Electoral Commission to tell us when people will give in the names of their candidates. It will be next year, and we don't see who will come here to force us to give the names of our candidates, of the names of those who will not be candidates. We are Congo. We have our law and rules. It is only next year at the end that this issue will come on the agenda.
Lamba Mende is Information Minister for the Democratic Republic of Congo. He was speaking with me from the capital, Kinshasa. Human Rights Watch says the recent conviction of just two Democratic Republic of Congo soldiers out of a total of 39 tried for a mass rape in 2012 points to deeper failings in the justice system. The rights group says despite enormous amounts of international funding, the system is failing to deliver justice both to victims and those accused of war crimes in the DRC. Nick Long reports from Goma.
It's been widely reported that at least 76 women and girls were raped at Minova in the eastern DRC after a chaotic army retreat in November 2012. In May 2014, a military court convicted two rank-and-file soldiers of rape and 25 of looting. They were sentenced to jail terms of up to 20 years with no right of appeal. But all the officers on trial were acquitted and no high-level commander was charged. In a report released this week on the case, Human Rights Watch says the only evidence against most of the accused men was that they had been absent from roll calls. The report's author is Geraldine Mattioli-Zeltner.
Of the 25 who were eventually convicted, only two were identified by victims during the trial.
Mattioli-Zeltner said the women had been attacked at night, making identification more difficult. More effort should have been made to hold commanders responsible, she says. Human Rights Watch says the case was rushed to trial, largely due to international pressure, and defendants had weak legal representation. The military court ordered the state to pay reparations to victims, but they have not been paid, nor have reparations in about 30 other war crimes cases in the DRC, according to Human Rights Watch. The government declined to comment. The international community has poured what Mattioli-Zeltner calls enormous amounts of money into the DRC justice sector in the past 10 years. There have been improvements, she says, but too much money goes on repetitive training, while certain attitudes remain unchanged.
I think you could continue international assistance like it's been going now for another 10 years, and then you probably have the same kind of trials in 10 years.
A report by the Open Society Initiative in 2013 found donors had spent about $150 million on Congolese justice over a period of several years, while the government was officially budgeting in the low tens of millions for the sector each year, most of it not spent. Nick Long for VOA News, Goma, DRC.
Nearly 100 bodies of people believed to be migrants and refugees from Africa washed up the Libyan coast on Tuesday while trying to reach Italy by boat. Daniel Zabo, a spokesperson for the International Organization for Migration, says it's possible people will continue to make the journey to Europe by boat, even with the latest high casualty numbers.
We know that there are two different areas where this is occurring near Libya's coast. 85 bodies have been found near Tripoli and another 10 around Sabah.
And even with the high numbers of deaths at sea, unfortunately, this year in regards to migrants and refugees crossing the Mediterranean, is almost 100 bodies in one day washing up quite a large number?
In terms of washing up, yes. Though we have seen some of the incidents, there have been some large incidents out there. One incident in August, there was over 200. So there's been some large incidents, and yet this particular one, in terms of that many washing up ashore, is unique.
Does this coincide with the weather getting worse? October is usually the season when these migrations by boat to Italy from Libya via the Mediterranean kind of end because of the weather, correct? I mean, are the seas getting worse?
Right. We think nothing is actually working or going according to any particular history. It is typically about this time when the weather gets rougher and the weather gets colder, and so we'll see a decrease. And yet, obviously, we can see by the incidents yesterday, not only coming through the central Mediterranean route with this particular incident of 95 bodies showing up, as well the eastern Mediterranean, where we also have increased activity. So weather is not a factor. And so certainly either it's a last push before the weather gets worse, we will see a decrease necessarily.
And so you think they might even continue throughout the winter?
I think it's very possible, certainly along the eastern Mediterranean route.
So you haven't seen a decrease yet, really?
Not really, no.
in years past, when does it usually decrease? The end of October, or by now has it decreased?
We look a little bit at history, yet I think this is a completely different time period of unprecedented movement. And yet last year we were starting to see a decrease start to happen, and certainly in the case of Italy and the Central Mediterranean route.
Is there any information about where these people who have washed onto Libya's coast, where they might be from, their countries of origin?
It's too early to tell at this time. We think we have reports that it seems to be sub-Saharan Africa, though its process is ongoing, sort of the recovery effort, so it's a little too early to tell at this particular time.
The IOM just put out new numbers this week about the refugees rescued in 2015, as well as the people who are missing in 2015. Could you tell me a little bit about what these numbers are like compared to years past?
We just revised the information as of an hour ago, and overall in the Mediterranean, arrivals are 564,031, and that's much more than double of the whole entire 2014.
That was Daniel Szabo, a spokesperson for the International Organization for Migration, speaking with Ricky Stryak from Geneva. Today's Wednesday, October 7th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Let's give a shout-out to listeners on these, our VOA affiliate stations, Buffalo FM in Monrovia, Liberia, Brela in Nigeria, Kisi FM in Tanzania, Radio Lake Victoria in Kisumu, Kenya, and Radio Hot Cocoa in Bamenda, Cameroon. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 17 minutes past the hour. The International Committee of the Red Cross says it has been forced to withdraw its entire staff from a humanitarian compound in South Sudan's Leer County in Unity State after it was looted and its aid workers threatened on Friday. Yesterday, the French medical charity group Doctors Without Borders announced it too was temporarily pulling out of Leer County.
Yamila Castro, the ICRC spokesperson in South Sudan, says the fighting started a week ago and escalated through the week until it reached the ICRC location in Leer County.
And there was heavy fighting on Friday in the morning and then again in the afternoon. At around 7 p.m., so early evening, several dozens of armed men came into the compound, the humanitarian compound where our colleagues were spending overnight, and they looted the compound. So they took ICRC vehicles and valuables, computers, telephones, money.
Castro says after the looters stole two vehicles on Friday, armed men returned on Saturday to take more items. They also threaten ICRC workers.
That's why we decide to withdraw from Leer County and to evacuate rapidly the team members, 10 people who were in Leer at the moment.
Also today, Medecins Sans Frontieres, or MSF, announced it too was pulling out of Leer due to looting, with emergency manager Tara Noel saying, quote, MSF strongly condemns these armed robberies of its medical personnel and facilities, unquote. She added, these incidents have forced MSF to suspend its medical activities in Leer, and they are responsible for depriving the population of urgently needed medical assistance, unquote. It is not the first time aid groups pull out of Leer. The ICRC left in May, citing deteriorating security conditions. Its staff had just returned to Leer last month. Castro says they were planning to provide food rations to the local population there shortly after conducting a survey that revealed a high rate of malnutrition, particularly among children, women, and the elderly. She says their plans came to an abrupt halt when the looting occurred.
We have put all our operations in Leer County in standby, which has terrible consequences for the people, because the humanitarian needs of the population in Leer County and surroundings are dire.
Castro is calling on government and the rebel forces to respect the permanent ceasefire declared by President Salva Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar after they each signed a peace agreement in August to end the conflict. For VOA News, I am Peter Tonaleu in Juba.
UN health officials say health care for adolescents globally is substandard and fails to provide critical prevention and care services. As Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva, the World Health Organization and UNICEF have just launched new standards to improve the quality of adolescent care.
Young people between the ages of 10 and 19 confront many physical and emotional changes. They do not like to be treated as children, yet they do not know how to behave like adults. Authors of the new adolescent health standards say young people are vulnerable to particular health problems and many engage in behavior that can lead to disability or death. Anthony Costello, WHO's Director of Maternal, Children's and Adolescents Health, says lifelong behaviors begin during puberty.
35% of the global burden of disease starts in adolescence. Mental health would be an area particularly where early intervention could make a great deal of difference to the life course, if you like, and the future illnesses in adulthood.
The study cites the top three causes of death among adolescents as road traffic injuries, AIDS-related illnesses, and suicide. UNAIDS senior advisor Dirk van Hove says adolescents are at high risk of HIV/AIDS because of risky behavior.
About 30 cases of new infections among adolescents happen every hour. And HIV among adolescents is still the leading cause of death in sub-Saharan Africa and the second leading cause of death in the world.
The report finds many adolescents who suffer from mental health disorders, substance abuse, poor nutrition, intentional injuries, and chronic illness do not have access to critical prevention and care services. The new standards recommend adolescents be provided with free or low-cost consultations and medical information appropriate for their age, and they should be able to access health services without requiring parental consent. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The streets and lagoons of Africa's largest city, Lagos in Nigeria, are often clogged with trash, almost none of which gets recycled. But as Chris Stein reports from Lagos, one company is trying to change that.
Adeyemi Okwoga is on the hunt for trash. Neighbors bring out bags of plastic and aluminum waste. He weighs them and carts them off, free of charge. Okwoga works for WeCyclers, a company that picks up recyclables from poor neighborhoods like Abute Meta in Lagos. WeCyclers co-founder and CEO, Bilikis Edebiye Abiola, says the city produces about 10,000 metric tons of trash daily.
So all those trash, the black bags, you know, the pure water sachets that clog the drains, everything can be recycled. It's a raw material for people that have factories. So our goal is to collect all those materials using as cheaply as possible on a large scale and then give them to people that can use them.
At their nearby depot, WeCyclers sort and process their haul. They then sell off their recyclables to firms that reuse them. The startup has yet to turn a profit, but plans to press on and expand to also compost organic waste. The company awards residents points based on the weight of what they contribute. People can cash points in for gifts including plastic bowls, generators, and bicycles. Abute Meta resident O.O. Oladepo says her neighborhood is cleaner.
Now that these people are working, I think they make Lagos clean. You understand? Because Lagos is a dirty place. Most especially this can, pure water, and the plastic.
So far, WeCyclers only works in two neighborhoods in this massive city, processing about 40 to 50 metric tons of recyclables each month. That's not even 1% of the city's daily waste. Chris Stein for VOA News, Lagos.
Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Mark Owoma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Wednesday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with basketball. Kenyan defending champions United States International University outclassed Rwanda's military side APR 75-32 in the women's contest at the Africa Zone 5 Club Basketball Championships in Kigali, Rwanda on Tuesday. Burundi's Berko beat Tanzania's Don Bosco 78-58 as Uganda's Kampala City Council Authority outwitted Rwanda's Ubumwe 64-55. In the men's contest, Rwanda's Espior outplayed Burundi's Dynamos 88-58. Egypt's Gezira beat Rwanda's CSK 93-47. Kenya's Ulinzi outplayed Tanzania's Savio 94-64. And Uganda's Power Tigers edged Kenya Port Authority 72-68. Staying in Kigali, in an all-Rwanda encounter, APR play Ubumwe. Uganda's Kampala City Council authorities face Tanzania's Don Bosco, as Kenya's United States International University play Burundi's Berko in the women's contest today, Wednesday. In the men's event, South Sudan's National Engineering and Logistics face Uganda's Tiger Power, Rwanda's SPR play Tanzania's Savio, Kenya's Ulinzi and Uganda's City Oilers face off as Rwanda's CSK engage Kenya Port Authority. In rugby, South Africa played the United States of America in their last Group B fixture at the Olympic Park in London, England today, Wednesday. Elsewhere in Exeter, Namibia challenged Georgia in their penultimate Group C tie. In football, the Comoro Islands host Lesotho in Moroni as Tanzania play visitors Malawi in Dar es Salaam. In Africa preliminaries for the 2018 FIFA World Cup qualifiers, Seychelles engage the visiting Burundi in Roche Kaima. South Sudan welcome Mauritania in Juba as Kenya travel to play Mauritius in Bellevue. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. Here's our listener mail for this Wednesday morning, October 7th.
Good morning, this is William Kokolo from Morovia, Liberia. I'd like to commend the outgoing Foreign Minister of Liberia, His Excellency Honorable Augustine Kehegafuan, for his resignation. I believe those executives eyeing any elected post come to 2017 should now follow the example of Honorable Gafuan and resign immediately to avoid serious embarrassment come 2017. Thank you and have a great day.
We thank you, listener, for your comment, and please send your viewpoints to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. The general in charge of the failed coup in Burkina Faso last month has been formally charged, along with one other top official accused of supporting the overthrow of Burkina Faso's interim government. General Gilbert Diendéré and Djibril Bassolé, a former foreign minister, were charged on Tuesday with attacking state security. During the failed coup, Diendéré's forces in the elite presidential guard detained the interim president, prime minister, and several cabinet members. The guard was unhappy the interim government barred supporters of former President Blaise Compaoré from running in upcoming elections. The family of convicted South African Paralympic athlete Oscar Pistorius, who was jailed in 2014 for killing his girlfriend, is criticizing government authorities for delays in transferring the star from prison to less restrictive house arrest. A parole board on Monday ruled that Pistorius, who has served 10 months of a 5-year manslaughter sentence, should not yet be granted house arrest. That is it for this Wednesday, October 7th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Marco Oman, along with our engineer Jim Harriman, I am James Butte in Washington saying, have a nice day, Africa.
Next on Straight Talk Africa, Riek Machar, South Sudan's opposition leader and former vice president, will sit down with host Shaka Sali. We'll discuss the recent peace accord and examine the country's uncertain future as the November deadline for the agreement draws near. That's Wednesday at 18:30 UTC, right here on Straight Talk Africa. Voice of America's news, talk, and music programs are now at the tip of your fingers. Find everything at www.voaafrica.com. Listen to VOA's program lineup live, anytime, day or night. Pick out your favorite shows and listen anytime you want. Download our podcasts. Check VOA Mobile from your cell phone. Subscribe to VOA Newsfeed. VOAnews.com. VOAAfrica.com.
News,
features, music from Africa and around the world. You want it? We have it on voaafrica.com.
voaafrica.com.